From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 28th day of June, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vegg. She's at Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, we'll hear all about the weather forecast from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. And along the way, I'll update you on the agricultural news for the day. China is looking to open up its borders to more GMO varieties from the United States. And the SNAP program could go online through Amazon Prime. We'll hear more about these stories as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the Closing Market Report for the 28th day of June. It's Wednesday afternoon. Jackie Vakes now here from Stuart Peterson. Hey, Jackie, thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Well, let's look forward to this Friday's USDA reports. They're due out at 11 a.m. on the 30th. You want to start with the grain stocks numbers?
Sure. I guess first I'd like to really talk a little bit about June 30th itself. You know, I think of June 30th as a witching day. You know, it's the end of the month, the end of the quarter, the end of the fiscal year for some. First notice day for July grain futures. Plus, we get grain stocks and June acreage reports. I mean, if that doesn't scare you, nothing will. Because, I mean, the market really has so much to digest in such a short amount of time that it's really difficult, plus all the other things that are going on.
What are your thoughts on this Friday's grain stocks report?
Well, you know, when you look at the average guesses, Todd, everything looks as if it's going to rise over what we were a year ago in June. Corn is expected to be 5.16 billion versus 4.7 last year. Beans, 981 million versus 872. And wheat, 1.15 versus 976. You know, overall, in the last 20 years, this particular USDA stocks report, the June one, is the number one most negative of any USDA stocks report. 71% of the time, it's not a good deal. And so when you look at the day of the report on corn, from the negative side, average over the last 20 years down 16 cents. If it was positive, it was up 17 cents. But again, 2 weeks after, if it's positive, it's up a penny and a half over the day of the report. And if it's down, it's negative 0.75 cents. Now, when you look at beans, it's a different story. This is the fourth most positive report of all the USDA grain stocks reports for the year. And on the day of the report, if it's negative, it's 18 cents, positive 28 cents. And then 2 weeks after, 2 cents higher than on the day of the report, or negative 0.75 cents. So it, you know, to me, the June stocks report, or the stocks report itself, far out trumps the acreage report. I mean, but that's all we hear about is the acreage report. We don't really hear much about anything else. But this is definitely a solid number that gives us usage, and that's really what we need to be able to see, okay, if we do lose acres, is it really that serious in the realm of everything else?
And even if we do, and there is a fairly large move on the day of the report, apparently it doesn't matter so much 2 weeks later.
No, not at all. It all settles down. So everything is, you know, and like I said, the day of that report, June 30th, there's a lot of stuff going on. So there's a lot to be digested. And we're heading into the July 4th weekend, you know, so that's another complication that we have, because here in the U.S., we've never had a drought that started after August 15th. So if the July 4th turns temperate and we start to get some rains, It'll be tough. And I think when you look at this report, the 2 weeks after says, in the majority of cases, that's what happens. July starts out as a fairly decent situation compared to what the day of the report looked like.
What are the expectations for the acreage numbers?
Well, I mean, they're not huge changes. 89.82 is the average versus the 90 million that the USDA had last month, and 94 million that we had last year. Beans, 89.95. That's a bigger change. It's almost a half million acres higher than the 89.5 that they had last month. And it's over 6.5 million higher than the 83.4 that we had last year. You know, so I went back and I looked at the acreage reports, and it's very interesting. If you look at the end of the report, you can get some pretty good information. On the March report, 8 out of 20 years, we came in on corn below the final number. And the biggest number we ever deviated was almost 3 million acres. Now, when you come to the June report, like I looked at June 16 last year, only 4 out of 20 years were we below, and that number now dropped to 2 million acres. Beans, 10 out of 20 years, we've been below the final. The highest we've ever seen is 3.3 million. And last year in June, 7 out of 20 we were below at about 2.5 million. So, you know, it's really interesting because it just shows you that basically the USDA doesn't have any solid numbers at this point in time. You know, it's just not possible. So their 90% confidence level still remains below 3% when you're looking at the June report. And so if you took the 90 million, let's just say we say it 90 million, that means we could be as low as 87.3 or as high as 97.7 or 92.7. And on beans, if we stayed at 89.5, we could be as low as 86.8 or as high as 92.2. So I think the wild card in this whole report is going to be spring wheat acres. You know, just how many of those, you know, might have gone to corn and beans? And did enough of them go to corn or beans to be able to offset all the wet situation and the potential, you know, prevented plant and everything else? And when you know, the bottom line is, I learned this probably the first week I started doing this job, yield is still much more important than acres.
It always is. What do you think yields look like?
I guess I'm still out in the park. I don't think 171 is very realistic, mostly because, you know, you look at soil, topsoil moisture in some of the main states. It's certainly not great. We've got really good to excellent stands in states that are not the biggest producers, except for Iowa. And so I looked at 167 potentially with an 81.6 harvested. And that would give me about a 13.6 billion bushel crop. Now, you know, if that were the case, I'd say, you know, the bottom end would be probably 13 billion, the top end almost 14 billion. Last year we had 15 billion. And so if we ended up with 13.63 and nothing else changed, it would give us a 1.675 carryout. But, you know, it's easy to say if nothing else changed, you know, because we know it still comes down to the July weather situation. On beans, I'm still looking at 48. 89.1 harvested, and you know, the 4.27 basically for a current with a max of 4.45 and a low of just under 4. You know, last year we had 4.3, and if we did that, now here's the thing that's interesting, because you know, we're looking at a projected 495 million bushel carryout. It would only drop it to 467, only 28 million bushels, you know. So if anybody out there is hoping that there's going to be some huge change, especially on the bean side of things, I don't think it's probably too realistic at all.
And then, of course, we have that wall of beans that should be coming out of Brazil into the export market.
Yes, that wall of beans. That's a good, you know, that's a good way. It's almost like a tsunami is what it really is. You know, and when you look at the, you know, those crops are definitely going to come in here, and they're probably going to be competing against us in the fall for beans. I think that it's just reality. You know, the farmers just haven't been selling beans down in South America. They're sitting with silos full. You know, in Brazil, they're only 58% sold right now compared to 76 last year. And, you know, if they sold at the current level, which is around 775 a bushel, they're either going to lose money or they're just going to break even. So, you know, it's until we see a reduction or the value of the real gets weaker against the dollar, to be able to bring some of that stuff to the market, it's going to be tough. And, you know, they're just starting to harvest the safrinha corn down there now. That's currently running 220 a bushel. So, you know, it's likely, I think, that the corn is going to get sold first, you know, leaving a lot of beans to sell later. And it's not going to be a great thing for us either if the corn gets sold first. They're going to be out there. They're going to be competing. And I'd say, you know, we could end up with another day like we saw not that long ago, where we just really saw depression in the market, and it was primarily coming out of South American selling.
Speaking of South America, what's up in Argentina these days?
Oh, what a country. Holy cow. I just shake my head. I mean, you know, Brazil itself has its own problems with bribes and fraud and everything else. And Argentina's had problems for years now. You know, they, in 2001, of course, they had a terrible, terrible breakdown in that country. And at that point in time, Kirchner, the husband Kirchner, was the president. And he decided, boy, you know, those farmers did pretty well. they didn't seem to suffer nearly as much as the regular people did, so he thought he was going to tax them to death with export taxes. And then, of course, he died, and then his wife got on board, and she really went crazy. In fact, at one time when we were higher on beans, she said if beans hit $20 a bushel, she was going to take 90% export tax. And even her own people in her own party voted against that, thank the Lord. But they now have a new president, Marseille, and he is he's promised that he's going to reduce or eliminate the old Kirchner export taxes on corn and beans and not interfere with exports. You know, it's really tough because you can see what happens. Just like here in the U.S., where we saw all these businesses go to other countries because of a heavy tax burden here, Kirchner's policies basically drove production into Paraguay and Brazil. And so, you know, the Argentinian farmer really stopped raising a lot of corn other than for, you know, feed use. And the 35% export tax on beans in the last few years has even reduced production there. So, you know, they're back online and they're looking to kick their acres up. I think it's ironic, though, Todd. Paraguay is now looking to enact export taxes along the line of those that drove corn and beans out of Argentina. So doesn't anybody learn? I mean, you know, it's just interesting how things, you know, how things move around and how they change, but they really don't change.
Hey, each week you've been tracking the crop progress reports for us. What did you see this week?
Well, it was pretty interesting. I mean, when you looked at our states with the highest levels really didn't change a lot, except that we do now have Iowa in there. We've got Colorado, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, and Tennessee. The ratings were anywhere between 79% good to excellent all the way up to 87. So that's a higher than it was last week. The lowest were, of course, South Dakota, North Dakota, Indiana, Ohio, and Kansas. There it went from 46 to 61, similar to last week. And when you looked at beans, basically Tennessee, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Kentucky, and Iowa came in the highest level, 74 to 87. Lowest, Indiana, South Dakota, Ohio, North Dakota, Missouri, between 39 and 64. A huge disparity there. 39 is really kind of a standalone by itself. You know, it jumped from, went from 39 up to the next lowest, I believe, was 59. And so it's just a situation where we're still seeing improvement, but is it enough? I went back and I looked. In 2013, we had 67% good to excellent for the U.S. on corn, and we came in with 123.1 bushels. In 15, we had 68. That was the closest one I could find, good to excellent, and we came in at 171 bushels. So again, it just reiterates how important July weather is to this particular corn crop. And I also went and looked at soil moisture this time. The best soil, topsoil moisture anywhere is in Mississippi, Louisiana, Tennessee, Wisconsin, Michigan. And the worst that we have, and this concerns me, is South Dakota, North Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, and Illinois. And yet I think it's ironic. Iowa has been going higher and higher. So that tells me that they may have a shortage on topsoil, but they probably have a decent amount of subsoil. You know, now that probably only lasts for so long. So, you know, it looked very similar last year. I just don't know, you know, can we be blessed like that, like, you know, like last year again, and just get the right amounts of rains in July and August, September? I don't know. We'll see.
We indeed will see. Hey, thanks so much for taking time with us today.
Thank you, Todd.
Oh, you're welcome. Jackie Vakes, of course, is with Stuart Peterson. In today's agricultural news, the United States is hopeful that more varieties of genetically modified corn will be approved for delivery to Beijing or China, that according to the U.S. ambassador to China today. The comments came after the world's top grain buyer this month approved two new strains of U.S. genetically modified crops for import from Dow AgroSciences and from Monsanto. We're hopeful that other corn trades can be approved, said Terry Branstad, who arrived in Beijing on Tuesday to take up his post. China does not permit the planting of genetically modified food crops, but does allow some GMO imports for use in animal feeds. But getting a new GMO crop variety approved for import typically takes around 6 years, compared with under three in other major markets, forcing leading agrochemical players to restrict sales during China's review process. This month's final approval of new GMO imports follow an agreement by the two nations in May to restart trade in U.S. beef. We are excited about the trade expansion and the opportunity to market American beef here, said Branstad. Let's stay in Washington, D.C. There's a new twist for USDA's food and feeding programs. Part of the 2014 Farm Bill is piloting 10 new delivery systems that will allow people using the SNAP program and others to order food online for home delivery. University of Illinois agricultural economist Craig Gunderson says when you look deeper, this program can do a lot to help those who cannot help themselves or that simply don't have easy access to a grocery store. He says there are food deserts in the United States.
I also like to think about food deserts in the context of individuals. So, for example, if somebody is working at a job and it's right near a supermarket, even if it's 2 miles from their house, they're probably okay if they can just go to that thing. However, if somebody has a mobility disability, even if there's a grocery store, you know, a block away, they may have trouble accessing that. Or if we think about, you know, senior citizens who may be, you know, homebound over different dimensions, even though they're close to a supermarket, they may not be able to access that easily. So I think that we have to think about not in terms of where somebody lives, but the conditions that might prevent them from accessing these. This is why there's been a recent proposal that's allowing people to order groceries online and use their SNAP benefits with respect to this. I think this would be fantastic for people who really are mobility constrained. Coming back to my earlier discussion earlier about people with disabilities, is that would be a great way to get food to people. And consistent with that, Amazon has agreed to reduce their Prime membership for those who are for low-income households receiving benefits through these different programs. So hopefully we can help to address some of these food desert issues by increasing access through some of these home delivery programs.
Well, the Amazon Prime program is already in place for EBT cardholders. EBT stands for Electronic Benefits Transfer. The discounted Amazon Price membership, $5.99 per month rather than $10.99, cannot be purchased with the card. Food is available to those using USDA SNAP, WIC, TAMF, and some other programs. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Let's turn our attention to the weather forecast now. Drew Lerner is here. He's with World Weather Incorporated. Drew, on Monday, the Iowa Weekly Crop Progress Report noted that the southeastern district, or the whole of the southeastern part of Iowa, had short topsoil moisture levels. Is this uncommon across the Midwest, and will it be alleviated by the rains that are supposed to swing through?
Yeah, we have had some scattered showers occur across Iowa here today and neighboring areas of Illinois as well, and we're not done. We'll see more precipitation occur across the majority of those areas, including neighboring areas of Minnesota and eastern Nebraska and northern Illinois. As we go forward through these next 2.5 to maybe 3 days, and enough rain will fall, even southward into Missouri, that we will help to eliminate some of this moisture deficit that has built up here recently. Central Illinois, of course, has had probably less than half of normal precipitation in a small region. It's not huge, but it is an important crop area that's been hurting for moisture for a while. I'm not convinced that that area is going to get a lot of rain, but there'll be some temporary relief there. Northwest Iowa and a small part of South Central Iowa are also less than half of normal for this month. There's even a few counties and parts of counties in northwestern Iowa that have had less than 25% of normal rainfall. So there's some problems out there. Also in Nebraska and Kansas and southeastern portions of South Dakota, all those areas running rather short on June rainfall, and there will be a chance for precipitation now over these next 3 days, and we will help to ease some of that. I don't think we're going to eliminate it in too many areas, but there will be some hefty rains in southern and eastern Iowa and northern Missouri, and probably northwestern Illinois into southern Wisconsin. So all of those areas will probably see a fair amount of rain, 1 to 3 inches, in fact. Local totals over 4 or 5 inches is possible. It might even be some local flooding. But when you get out to northwest Iowa, southeastern South Dakota, and parts of Nebraska, I'm not sure that we're going to see a lot of meaningful rainfall in those areas. Another place that's rather dry is southeastern Michigan. That area also has been less than half of normal rainfall for this month. So there are some areas out there that need to be tended to before we get into the July warmer days.
Is this the first in a series of events before we get to July 4th or not?
I think we'll have some opportunity for rain off and on over this next full week, actually. But what will happen as we get beyond the holiday, as I think we'll start heating up across the Midwest. You know, we've had all this cool air around here recently, which has really helped to conserve moisture. I think some of these drier areas would have been in much worse shape had we been more seasonable on temperatures here recently. But there are additional showers and thunderstorms, and many areas in the Midwest will see rain between now and this time next week. After that time, I think we'll see some ridginess building up across the plains and parts of the Rocky Mountain region that may still allow for additional showers to occur across the northern and eastern Midwest. But I think some of those areas in like Nebraska and South Dakota that haven't done real well with rain recently may actually see more drying and warming take place as we get into the latter part of next week and through the following weekend as that ridge of high pressure builds up.
Any concern that that ridge will stick around?
I think that we are going to be dealing with ridginess around for a while in the western fringes of the Corn Belt, but as far as Illinois and points eastward is concerned, I doubt seriously we would have any prolonged period of ridge building across the region. I do think in the second half of July there will be a good potential for some warmer and drier conditions to occur, but it's not at this point in time looking like it's something that would persist for a long period of time. But the western Corn Belt will be under the influence of a ridge a lot more often than the eastern and central areas will be. So I would be a little bit more watchful for areas near the Missouri River Valley and points westward. And, of course, we already have a drought of significance in the northwest U.S. plains, and that is only going to worsen. In fact, I expect it to expand a little bit to the north and south, including a larger part of Canada and also a large part of Nebraska, perhaps, as we go forward through this next 2 or 3 week period.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason.